We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Go Blue with Stu. I'm your host, Stuart Douglas, as always, on the Field of 68 Network. With me today is Michigan grad, host of the Spiro Avenue show, Justin Spiro. What's going on, man? I appreciate you coming on.
Michigan grad, you're off to a bad start already.
Did I say Michigan grad?
It's Michigan State. Yeah, Michigan, you're like State an grad. ESPN. See,
I can't even recognize state as a word when it's next to Michigan, that I can't even say it next year's. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a big mistake to make. I mean, Michigan State people couldn't get into Michigan, I was told, by your star former All-American second team center. So, yeah, you don't want to make that mistake right out of the gate. You know, we're very sensitive in East Lansing. So,
no, we don't. Man, he's been good at that. He's been so good at playing heel. I don't even know what's real or fake with him anymore. But, yeah, I've only had Michigan people really on the podcast talking about Michigan basketball, obviously, as we're a Michigan basketball podcast, but haven't had the other side and too many controversial opinions. But it's been a very controversial time in Michigan basketball, and I'm hearing it from fans on Twitter left and right about Juwan as a coach. So I kind of wanted to get the other side's opinion on what they're seeing from an outside perspective, although it still is a little biased. Obviously, we both have our biases with being from the other side and have our opinions about State or Michigan, vice versa. But what do you see? Are you on the fire Juwan train, or are you just kind of observing it right now and can't quite figure out what's going on with everything?
I understand why that's a topic. Like, that's, if I were hosting a Michigan show, that's what people are talking about. So that's, I'm not criticizing the question, because I would ask the same one in your spot. But it's really a non-serious conversation. Like, there's no way they would do that. And I think, furthermore, it's insane that they would even suggest that at this point. You're not that far removed from being on the cusp of a Final Four. You don't pull the plug that quickly. I mean, even North Carolina doesn't pull the plug that quickly on their coaches.
Right.
Kentucky doesn't pull the plug that quickly on their coaches. And, you know, Michigan, I think, is not quite at that level, but Michigan's at that sort of top of the second tier level. I have a lot of respect for that program. So, I mean, it's a non-serious conversation to have at this point. I do think it's fair, if next year goes poorly, to at least have the conversation, depending on what poorly looks like. I mean, how poor are we talking about?
Yeah.
But if they let's say they miss the tournament this year, which is not definite yet,
yeah,
and then they miss it again next year, you're Michigan. I'll give you the one mulligan. North Carolina had their 10-20 year, and then they were in the national title game a year later. Like, Kentucky missed it one year, broke that streak, but they were right back in the next year. You can't miss the tournament twice in a row. So I think it's insanely premature. but it's not premature to say, oh, this is something to keep an eye on for next year.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just such a nuanced topic that goes beyond like, oh, he won this amount of games or lost this amount of games or even missed the tournament. I do agree with you. Next year is a huge barometer. If you miss the tournament 2 years in a row, now it depends on who comes back. Let's say Hunter leaves, Kobe leaves, Jet leaves. And I don't know, you have like a weird transfer. You know, maybe there's a built-in excuse there, but then you're looking at like, well, why do these guys leave? So that is part of the nuance as well. It's like, why are guys leaving? Why did Frankie Collins leave? Now all these guys can leave, even if they like have their starting spots locked in for next year. So it's a weird topic, I think, for me personally, to compare Juwan to Beilein. I mean, he took over the job right as college basketball was changing really big time. And for better or for worse, like, you know, now Hunter will probably, I think, will probably come back for his senior year because of the NIL changes. You know, let's all knock on wood that he'll be getting the money from, what is it? I can't remember what the program is that Michigan fans started. But on the other side of it is like, you got guys that can leave in and out, and now you're expected to use a transfer portal to your advantage every single year. I think there's a learning curve there for all coaches. And all in all, you need a greater length of time to figure it all out. I feel like Michigan for sure, it's been one of my biggest problems with Michigan, even when I was there, was that there was always an expectation of greatness. And I was like, in football and basketball, like, we haven't been great for years, years and years and years. Like, why are we judging Rich Rod and Beilein after 2 or 3 years based off of, because of some success that guys happened like 10 years ago or 15 years ago? Like, they're still looking for the Fab Five, you know, when Beilein was there. And it was like, this stuff takes time. I know in the middle of me being with Beilein, it was like, we were doing the right things. He was the exact same coach he was when we were playing well as we were when we were playing bad. Now there was some nuance, there's some differences there about how the team reacted, but it's just such a long-term thing. Like, I am fully ready to have all sorts of patience. And I think that they've actually improved on the things that they didn't like about Juwan, like the offense. I don't know how much you've watched of Michigan, but I think there's been a lot of improvement of how this team has played from the beginning of the year. I mean, if they don't lose to Central Michigan, like we're talking about their like first four out or first last four in, like at very minimum to me. Do you think that's wrong?
I mean, they were last four in 5 seconds ago before the Indiana game with the Central loss. So I think that's definitely safe to say they were already in there. So I think if you take away the Central loss, which is just devastating. I mean, they're 10-21 now. I think that's kind of self-evident. I disagree a little bit on the football. Not that we're having a football discussion, but Michigan's the fan base being mad about the football program when Rich Rod was there. There were a number of reasons why he didn't work out, but they were not 10 years removed. 2 years earlier, they were in a 1-2 against Ohio State. And the year after that, 1 year before Rich Rod, they were preseason number 4 or 5, the Appalachian State year. So that made a little more sense. The basketball thing, I completely agree with you. And it's Beilein, who is your coach. I think he's one of the few successful Michigan figures that Michigan State people can't really say anything bad about. Like, we actually like John Beilein and respect that guy. When you're looking at these programs in general, just any college program, football, basketball, doesn't matter. I kind of look at it in two ways, in two components. Number one, what's happening on the court or on the field? Like, if you're winning, that's great. If you're losing, whatever, sucks. But the second component is, what's the trajectory of the program that you see going forward? How's recruiting? You know, what's the attrition like with staff? You know, are you getting good guys? So, like, Mel Tucker, for the football side, Michigan State, the on-field results sucked this year. Like, 5-7 is objectively embarrassing for a program with pride, and Michigan State has that. But I can look at 20 other data points to say, okay, it's still a healthy program. They're spending a ton of money. The facilities are going to be brand new. They had the highest recruiting class in the history of the program. So I can live with 5-7 with seeing something better on the horizon. With Juwan Howard, I'm seeing a mediocre on-court product and the worst recruiting class Michigan's had in some time. They don't have one guy, I think, in the top 75 or 100. So if they have attrition, as we expect they'll have some, it just depends how bad, they better hit that portal, because now I'm looking at the team doesn't look good now. The recruiting class is at not an all-time low, but a recent history low. What am I hanging my hat on at that point? I'm not saying fire him, but I would start to have concerns if I were a Michigan fan.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, definitely. And I should have stated that it was more about hiring Harbaugh when you went through the Rich Rod, Brady Hoke eras, because I should have said, like, I experienced those eras. They were not great. Like, let's be happy with good instead of bad. Like, when you have constant turnover, it just it puts the program in a state of turmoil, and it's hard to get that footing. I think what thing Beilein did really well was stick around and have it, as Stauskas always tells me, like, make it cool to go to Michigan again. And you don't have that if you're like always questioning the coach. It is all dependent on this turnover. It really is. The recruiting class was not super great. I don't know. We'll see what Washington and Papa can do when they come in. It all depends. You never know what freshmen are going to do when they come in. But I mean, they have Doug and Terrace to build on. Let's say Kobe can come back and Hunter can come back, and you got Terrence. I mean, nobody is going to really leave. You're going to miss Joey Baker. But you can probably replace him in the portal, to be honest with you, with a guy like that. You find shooters all the time in the portal to come in for their fifth year or fourth or fifth year. So that it's a weird conversation that we can have this and evaluate. Like, there's two parts of it, right? Like, what they're doing as a coach, and then other circumstances that I don't know. Sometimes they are under control, sometimes they aren't. Like Frankie Collins, there was some, you know, rumors around him that, like, that situation and dealing with his family or friends group or whatever it may be, his advisors, like, wasn't great. And like, he wasn't getting great advice. So like, is that Juwan's fault? I don't really know. What I will say is that I think players like Juwan, and what I really want to do, and this is like the X factor for me that we'll never fully get right. I want to be inside that huddle. I want to we'll never be able to go through like months and months of practice and see how Juwan actually like operates a program. Cause to me, that is huge. Like how he can get guys to react, how he can get them to improve. And if they like him, like, can he build a program? Like, I think he's learning about recruiting a little more. He's learning about the X's and O's. I think his X's and O's have got a lot better this season. He can't just throw the ball up like he did with the Miami Heat, right? So there's like these little things that we'll never be able to answer. So I always have trouble with these conversations. They're like, there's so many things I don't know. There's so many things I don't know and I can't answer. And the things that I really want to know, like, what's a coach like inside the huddle and on a month-to-month, game-to-game basis? And that's what makes it hard for me to like really engage in some of these conversations, to be honest.
And the biggest thing, in my opinion, from what I'm seeing, and just as a general matter, but as it pertains to Michigan, why this conversation is hard to have. If you go back, let's say 12 months and 9 days, University of North Carolina was outside looking in for the NCAA tournament. They were trying to get on the bubble, work their way up to the bubble, ended up beating Duke at Cameron Indoor, basically clinched their tournament appearance last year. But I mean, you're going back just over a year. North Carolina didn't even think they were going to make the tournament. They end up going to the national championship game, had Kansas down like 17 points or whatever it was, and had a chance to win at the end. None of that happens. They missed the tournament entirely if Brady Manek is not there from the portal. I mean, he was huge in that regular season. They would have been a 500 team thereabouts if he doesn't land there, if they don't get Brady Manek. That one guy was worth getting into the tournament and getting on the cusp of a national championship a hair away. So, you know, who knows who's going to be available in the portal, but it's basketball. It's not football. Like, although Michigan State had a football example with Kenneth Walker, but for the most part, basketball, you had one or two guys. Everything we're talking about is out the window. I mean, so we can say recruiting's bad this class, relatively speaking, which it is, just objectively by the rankings. It's lower than prior. We're not happy if we're Michigan fans with what we're seeing on the court, but you are one living room conversation away from getting a portal guy, and this whole thing kind of changes. So it is a fool's errand to really project into the future. But what you can say is the stuff that we do know, I would be like not upset. I would be nervous as a Michigan fan. That's just where I would stand.
Yeah, no, and I totally get that. It comes down to the nuances of talking about basketball over results, which is always the hardest conversation. Like I said, like you just, I don't know. I can look at like what schemes probably are during the game or how they should be executing things. The only thing that I can say is that I've seen vast improvement in the way that they've been executing. And even when they brought Jet back and the whole, are they better without Jet and are they better offensively and defensively? Defensively is probably less arguable, but offensively, people were wondering like, well, do they execute more without Jet? And yeah, but they brought him in. I think they did execute pretty well against IU at a tough environment. So I always said if the season was 50 games long, this would be a totally, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I think the development of this team going forward, I mean, they're in the Big Ten. They're just as good as anybody else. Like they're in the Big Ten. They are a tournament team. And, but that doesn't move the needle for anybody, because if they miss the tournament, that's a big deal. So it's that balance of like, are we seeing improvement here versus the results? And it's like, I'm banging my head against the wall at all times. But I want to ask you, if they do make the tournament, I had people tell me that last year making the tournament, making the Sweet 16 was like lipstick on a pig for them. They still didn't view the season. Now, if they would have had a good season, this is my problem with fandom, is they had a good season this year. They'd been talking very different about that Sweet 16 last year, about how it was the stepping stone to an improved season. But do you think them making the tournament, after squeaking in 2 years in a row, and let's say they win a couple games in the tournament, like, is that progress for you? Because for some people, they're still not happy with it.
I don't think it's progress if that's what happens, because you've already done all that. I mean, progress by definition means we're moving forward. You're so going to be.
We view it a little different.
Well, how do you view that as progress? So you're just doing what you already did.
I do think that the expectations early on that this team was going to be a top 25 team, and the team last year, like the team last year was definitely skewed towards Caleb and Musa's rankings. And then from what they had last year, that team that they had the year before, which was an amazing team. And I thought that was unfair. Like, I remember going in the season saying like, they're not a top 25 team. It's just not the case. They won't be early. They'll lose games. They'll jump out of top 25. And this year they're ranked the same way. And I'm like, you can't be putting all this amount of freshman minutes into the top 25. It's just really not going to work. Sometimes it works, but like, it's just not something you should predict to be in the top 25. So I never thought they were there from the get go. And all I wanted to see from them was improvement. And it took a long time. So that's, I view it just a little bit differently, as they have progressed this year. Last year was very frustrating to me. It was honestly more frustrating, even though people weren't as frustrated last year. That might be a lie. They probably were a little bit with Caleb and the expectations there. But again, I just had not the same expectations. So I feel like maybe my bias is that I am seeing some improvement and that I want them to play well and improve. And I like these kids. So maybe I'm too inside baseball right now with all this.
I think it's funny. I want more for your program than you do. I mean, just on principle, I'm not saying, I said I wouldn't fire him. I think that's an insane conversation. I think it's insane. I don't even think I see where you're coming from. I think you're crazy if you're a Michigan fan, you're saying, oh, you got to fire him. I think you're nuts. I don't even think it's a topic of legitimate conversation. But I would be mad. I mean, I think you guys got to be better than that at this point. I mean, Tom Izzo, first 2 years, missed the tournament. Any basketball coach coming over doing a rebuild of a program, you kind of give them a pass those first couple years anyway. But since year three, has never missed the tournament since in a quarter century. Juwan Howard has already failed in that by missing the tournament. If it happens, we're not there yet. They could redeem this whole thing. But if he does, he's already done something that the school up the road has never done with their coach that's in place right now. So I don't understand the Michigan perspective, which you are in that camp. It seems like you should be a Final Four, win the Big Ten type thing. I mean, that's what I apply to Michigan State. It's like, did we win the Big Ten? Are we going to the Final Four? Obviously, national championships, wonderful. That's a really hard thing to demand and pound the table. But like Sweet 16s, it's nice. I'm not thumbing my nose at it, but Michigan has graduated from that in the Beilein era and should expect more, in my opinion.
How much, though, are you going to give him grace for stepping? I am not a believer of this program was humming and then they handed you on and should be doing the same exact thing. He was never a head coach. He's never been a head coach. He has no idea what he's doing on a lot of different levels. And I just don't think that's fair. Like that team, he's changed so much in the last 2 years. Like that team that he had with Livers and Franz, you could play that NBA style. Like they came up and they played pretty free. Even Hunter was a part of that. And then the defending, like he didn't have to teach them very much. They knew the basic principles, so he could coach them like they were NBA players, I feel like. And then he gets the Caleb and Musa team last year. And it's like, damn, I need to really take this down to basics. And I didn't realize how important it was that I have to play these freshmen now. And that some guys are just have a different learning curve than others. And this is the same exact thing this year with having to play freshmen again. I mean, I really thought Caleb and Musa were going to come back and it was going to be a whole different season. But are you not giving him the benefit of the doubt at all? I really think that it's very different from where he took over and he's realizing like, oh shit, like this is actually very different. Like the last 2 years is the actual test. And it's like actual now figuring out what college basketball is. And should he have just taken the program and just hummed along with it? Like, should it have been that easy? I don't find it to be that easy.
It's not that it's easy. It's just, it's not easy to accomplish things when you're applying it to a high standard. I don't think it should be considered easy, but you're Michigan basketball. It's a hell of a program. I mean, I don't think anybody, even Michigan people, put it in like a blue blood program, but I think you guys are right in that next level. So it's not that it's easy, but how long is this internship? I mean, we're in year four, right? I mean, so
one more year.
If you're Valiant defense, to use the Michigan term Valiant, if your Valiant defense of Juwan Howard is, well, to be fair, he doesn't know what he's doing. He's never done this before. He's starting to learn. That's not a great ringing endorsement, in my opinion. I mean, again, I do think it's funny. It's like, who's the Michigan State guy? And who's the Michigan guy here? I feel like I'm the Wolverine demanding more, but I don't know. I am thrilled if Michigan wants to settle for Sweet 16 as a ceiling. I think that's awesome. I think it's great for Michigan State, but just on principle, that should be done by now. I mean, that's kind of like a year one on the job, year two on the job argument. So you're saying one more year. So the internship, he graduates from the internship like after this year or after next year?
After this year. Now,
okay.
A little caveat for me. I'm still going to, like, if everyone leaves next year, like, I'm not having zero expectations. But if you get, let's say, best case scenario, Jet is the only person that leaves, then you have to win next year. Like, you have to be top three in the Big Ten, if not win the Big Ten. You have to pretty much win the Big Ten, I think. I can't imagine what the projections are. I don't know what the projections are next year, what teams look like. But, and then at least make the Sweet 16. You know, that is definitely an expectation for me next year with this team coming back, if you can get that mostly of that core back. It all kind of depends on some things. But I'm not going in with zero expectations at all. I just know it's funny. Both years, like last year with Musa and Caleb, and this year with all the freshmen, and then like Kobe playing his first major minutes, Beilein would have lost his damn mind playing this many 18 and 19 year old kids. He lost his mind. He hated it. He said the best thing about freshmen is they become sophomores. It was the worst thing in his mind that he had to play freshman ever. I mean, he tried to bench me so many times, but he couldn't because I was his only option there, the two guard for a while. But it's I don't know. And is that on Juwan? We'll see. But no, I'm definitely not like prolonging the internship. If these guys come back, or even if you have like Doug and Terrace and Will, like even if Kobe comes back, if like one of Kobe, Jet, or Hunter come back, there's going to be major expectations on the season next year.
There's a lot of Michigan fans. I had Greg Waddell on my show. I don't know if you're familiar with his work from Sleepers Media, and he's a big Michigan basketball guy. And he had an interesting theory, and I've heard it repeated since then. I'm curious for your take on it, not to play host on your own show, but his opinion was Hunter Dickinson leaving would be a good thing, he thinks, because he thinks that his teammates don't like him. Everything has to be sort of built around him, and you can have almost like a addition by subtraction, not saying he's not a hell of a player, because that's self-evident. Everybody understands that.
Yeah.
But there are certain situations where a guy leaves and the team gets better. Bill Simmons talked about it with, he called it the Ewing theory, how the Knicks would sometimes play better when Patrick Ewing was hurt. I don't know. What's your take on that? He seems to think Dickinson is leaving would be the best thing for Michigan. Is he insane in your opinion?
He came on here and we talked about it a little bit, and we didn't really get into it too far. I can't remember exactly what we talked about, but I disagree. I wholeheartedly disagree. I think that from what I've seen, like, Hunter is actually like a soft-spoken kid. And I think he does. Now, we'll never know, right? This is my take. We'll never know unless we're inside the locker room. And even then, you have these bitter relationships. Like, I had plenty of teammates I did not care for, like, did not want to talk to, did not want to deal with. But he seems like a guy that is playing the heel, and he keeps that pretty separate elsewhere. To be honest with you, I think he's a little too unselfish. I mean, the amount of ball screens this kid will willingly set boggles my mind sometimes. There was a game, not a game, it was the IU game, the last game against IU, and it was a play to end regulation, and he set a ball screen for Jet, willingly came out. He, like, called for the ball to go to Jet in the wing and was like, thought you were going to throw it to him in the post, and then he willingly went and set a ball screen. I'm like, if I am Hunter Dickinson, there's no way in hell I am setting a ball screen there. I'm demanding the ball in the post and then creating from there. Like, I am the go-to guy. So I think he's been a pretty willing teammate. I think last year he had a lot of issues with the team. I think there's a lot of issues within the team about dealing with those guys. I think this year, from all reports and just from watching his body language and how he's given effort, it was way better than it was last year. So I don't fully believe that. I think on top of that as well, Terrace needs another year to develop, would be great at the five spot, play a little twin towers with him next year, but develop a little more underneath him. I don't know. We'll see if Terrace is fully ready to take on the five spot 30 minutes a game as a sophomore. If Hunter leaves, that's in the air. But Greg did say that the true test will come when Hunter leaves. For Juwan, the true test for Juwan will be when Hunter leaves. Is that next year? Is it a year after that? I don't know. I don't know if I fully agree with that either, but I fight back against that on Greg. I think that Hunter is actually not an asshole. I think that he's a pretty likable guy and surprisingly soft-spoken. I think if you were to talk with
soft-spoken? This guy went on a microphone. Well, and insulted an institution of 50,000 students, hundreds of thousands of living.
And it makes him money. And it makes him a lot of money.
Well, no, that's fine. But don't say he's soft-spoken. I mean, if that guy...
In the locker room.
Okay. I mean, that's a fair distinction. I mean, if that guy's soft-spoken, I want to see who's boisterous. Who's boisterous and loud and opinionated? I mean, it's like you're going to have to shatter the decibel meter to find someone. To me, he's the most outspoken to a fault. I don't think it does anybody any good for him to do what he does. I mean, if I were a Michigan fan, I don't think I would like him. And I have a lot of Michigan fan friends. They're not big fans of his act. They like him as a player, but they don't like a lot of the stuff that he does. And they're kind of burned out on it. It's from my conversations, but yeah, I don't know. It'll be interesting. That was Greg's theory. I'm not saying I subscribe to that as a general rule. Yeah. I mean, as a general rule, just give me the talent. Like I'm going to be better if I get rid of this really good guy. It's not that it's never happened. It has happened where a team, you know, Grant Hill left, the Pistons were better. Everyone's like, what the fuck's going on here? I don't know if I can swear on this. But you know, it's like everyone, how did that team get 15 games better when Grant Hill leaves for Chucky Atkins and Ben Wallace? So there's a sports precedent for it. I'm not saying Greg's nuts. I do think it's an interesting theory. It'll be interesting to see if it gets tested, you know, next year or 2 years from now. And this will be the last question I ask you, and then you can start peppering me.
This is why this is good.
So it's conversational, okay? Yep. I'm sitting in my host chair in the studio here, so I've got to remember I'm not on my own show. But I'm curious for your take. As you were for the most part, 4-year starter. I mean, you started double-digit games all 4 years you were there. So I defer to your acumen here. The in-game, end-of-game coaching decisions have been – I think objectively the most discussed criticism angle of Juwan Howard this season.
Yeah.
I other than I did watch the entire Indiana game, for the most part, I only watch like the last 5 minutes of close Michigan games. I got other stuff going on. My wife's already tired of me watching every second of every Michigan State game.
Right.
So I'm only seeing the end of game pretty much. I don't think he's great at the end of the games. I mean, I don't know if it's results or guys are just missing open looks or whatever. Joey Baker missing a wide open shot. He's a 40-plus three-point guy. That's not on Juwan Howard. So I think it's a little overblown. But like, what's your take on that? Is that a fair criticism? Are you seeing from a guy with a high basketball IQ like yourself, are you seeing like, oh, I don't like Juwan's approach to the end-of-game situations? Or is that sort of idiot Twitter fan nonsense?
I think mostly dumb. I think there's some criticisms there. I think they were trying to do too much. I think I can't remember what game it was. There's sometimes they try and do a little too much and where they should just simplify. I mean, Beeline at the end of the game, it was quick hitters. Like we were running a ball screen or a pin down action. Like there was not a lot of complicated action going on. Like it was, we're going to win with talent and we're going to exploit the inevitable switch that happens, like all the switching. So I think they were actually, he was trying to do too much. And the weird argument is like, he's not doing enough. And I'm like, he should just simplify it. He did it really well. The other part of it is some of it's on the players. The IU game at home, they ran a ball screen action and they try to run sort of an odd Spain action where Jet, like, I don't know if he was supposed to come off a pin down after Hunter set the screen, if he was just supposed to replace the roller. I don't know what happened, but they set a screen, wasn't a good screen on Hunter, didn't even touch the man. And then Kobe went down in the paint and he went down and he got inside the paint, dribbled out a little bit and didn't even look at the rim. And if this was, you know, a few games later, Kobe's talent would say, okay, just go make a spin move and shoot a little jumper like you do every, like during the other 39 minutes of the game. So some of it is on the players for sure. Like a lot of it, Kobe and the IU game at IU just recently, half court, he had a chance to shoot it and he just like tried to throw it to Hunter in the middle of the court inexplicably. And so that's some nerve there. That's still freshman nerves. I think they're working through. So some, I think it goes both ways, but like at the same time, your guys gotta, you gotta be confident. Like you gotta let your talent show through. And no matter what play you draw up, the timing and the execution have to be right. And that's why quick hitters are usually best. I think if you overcomplicate things, like there's only a few Brad Stevens, and like that's really only in like some variances out of timeouts with like some out of bounds plays. I think when you watch the NBA, what's the final minute? It's one-on-one because you don't want to overcomplicate things. Like some ball screen stuff, it depends on who the opposing big is defending it, but or whatever mismatch you may have. I don't know. I wouldn't overcomplicate it. And I think it's a little bit of both, but I think they've done pretty well. I mean, this, it, again, it's, you know, consolation, but they've been in overtimes three games in a row. And those games, 15 games ago, they had just lost by 10 in the final minute. Like this. So progress is great. And if it's not winning you games, obviously it's not that great, but I think they have done a lot better. Like the way they've executed to get those games into overtime or come back from deficits, like it was Wisconsin that looked bleak. Like they have been doing better. So I think the criticism it's easy when you're losing games. I think if they've been winning the games and run the exact same thing, there'd be zero criticism whatsoever, which is one of my
problems. Well, as an example, I mean, the aforementioned Baker shot, everyone was, how does the final shot go through Baker? I said it on Twitter right after. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, I know this is the idiot Sparty over here, but if you're telling me I can get a wide open look for a guy that shoots like 44% from three, coach, good job, coach. I mean, that's, you know, what more do you want? I understand the argument of having to go through your best guy, but you got it to your best 3-point shooter, objectively speaking, statistically on the team, got a wide open look for the win. I'll take it. I didn't like, if I were a Michigan fan, that nonsense at the end of regulation against Indiana. I don't know. Am I crazy? How does that play not go through Dickinson in the post? And if he has to pass out and they double or triple, fine. I don't know how you don't not just get a post touch, but the whole thing should have been geared on Dickinson. He was giving them some real problems down low. Is that a fair criticism?
No, for sure. And it was odd. Like I mentioned before, it looked like he was calling for it.
Yeah.
Like he was like, he like literally motioned his arm to Kobe. I think at the ball, I was like, pass to Jet. And I thought he was going to post up. And then he just went out and set a screen. So I don't know. I'd be interested to see what the play call was at that point too. There's a point where, you know, Hunter's got to demand the ball. Like, he is the All-American big guy, supposed to be, you know, all Big Ten player. There's a point where you got to call the play yourself and you got to go in the huddle. I mean, I didn't go in every single on huddle and call the play, but Zach and I, a lot of times, junior and senior, be like, this is what we see. This is what we need to do. But a lot of it was self-evident. Like, senior year is like, Trey's our guy. We're just going to give it to Trey and run a ball screen. That's like, what else are we supposed to do here? Unless we need a three and we'll maybe run some variation of a screen. But yeah, I think that it does have to go to Hunter. And I think where that comes from, maybe they did call that play. I don't know. It just looked really weird at the end. But I think, like, you have to tell everyone, go to Hunter, and he's got to demand that. So it's a bit of both ways. But yeah, there's no way that Juwan should be calling anything else in that game. Maybe some of their games are a little different, but in that game, no, should be.
I'd have to cut the tape back on, but from remembering the play, that did not look like the coaching staff called a post, you know, touch for Dickinson and the defense denied it and you just had to go elsewhere. That just didn't look like that was a design. It looked like it was an option, but that had to go through him unless they're triple teaming him, you know, on the pass, which would never happen anyway. So
yeah,
I mean, as someone that was rooting for Indiana, I thought it was great, but I thought it was absurd. What are the chances of Michigan winning that game if he's going down low and driving? I mean, 60%. I mean, it's pretty high. I would take my chances. And if, you know, if you're All-American best player who's great in the post doesn't get it done, I'll go down with that ship. It's better than the alternative and going down with whatever the hell that was. I don't know what that was. I mean, you should know a thing or two about this. Actually, you were a absolute menace at the end of games with, you had a game winner against Michigan State and a game effective ender at Breslin. That was the first time you guys had won there in like 15 years or something, right? When you hit the three,
yeah.
You guys were up. I think you were up two. I was there.
Yeah,
you're up two with the ball,
slowly losing momentum.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. You're up two with the ball with, like, I don't know, 35 or 30 seconds left or whatever. So
yeah, something like that.
Yeah, you were a source. I mean, the first time we've met, quote unquote, but I know your face really well because my best friend's a Michigan grad, and anytime I would give him any type of shit for anything, he would send a picture of you hitting the
that's good. That's
so hilarious. I've seen a picture of you shooting that shot 6,000 times in my life. So that's you're a major trash talk source for him. But yeah, I mean, you were, I'm only half kidding. I mean, you won these games. You were the one winning these games for your team. I mean, those are the two I know about.
Yeah.
Maybe there were other teams that you tortured us twice. I don't know. I just thought in both years, one of them was like a layup, right? I mean, that,
yeah.
I think Burke got to you.
Yeah.
And obviously the three was a great shot. I feel like Beeline was better at this. I think it is overblown. Like I said, Baker wide open. People were mad about that. That's nonsense. But I felt like Beeline was so good. I felt like you guys always at least got a pretty good look, and it doesn't seem that way. But again, you're comparing Juwan to, I mean, Beeline's what, one of the best 8 to 10 X's and O's coaches of the last 30 years. So that is a high standard, but to be fair.
Yeah. No, it's a fair point. I think what you were saying, why we got shots at the end every time, was because he simplified it. I think where you get, like, especially like in the NBA, it's a little more open court, so it's a little easier, but it's like, all right, we're going to run something. We'll try it. But if that doesn't work, we're at least bailed out to where, like, the guy with the ball, we trust to make something happen within this space. And so I think sometimes they'll overcomplicate it and then be like, oh, we just put him in a place where there's, like, way too much help side defense. And that's obviously, it's hard to do in college. It's help side defense everywhere at all times. But I think what Beeline did really well was simplify it a little bit, not overthink some things, especially when you have a young team and the talent that Michigan has. I mean, they have such talent that, yeah, it's probably easier just to simplify everything and go from there. But yeah, I think we could be talking a little different. Some of these shots were to fall, or let's say Kobe was a little more aggressive at that IU game at Michigan, if you were just to turn around, hit that shot like he does all the time. So, you know, there's a lot of what ifs there, but we'll see. It's you know, before we get out of here, I want to talk about the look, but I want to talk about some Michigan State basketball a little bit, and then going into the Big Ten tournament, what your thoughts are as a whole with the Big Ten. Michigan State, to me, I think they look good ever since the Michigan game. I mean, they should be 4-0. That Iowa meltdown was tough, but they controlled that game and they looked really good in that one, besides the last couple minutes in OT. You know, had a really good win against IU. And then I think, you know, what it was, Ohio State was whatever. And there was another game. Minnesota was, you know, not Minnesota. Who was the second last game they played?
For Michigan State?
Yeah.
Second to last game. I know we just beat Ohio State. They all kind of mixed together for
They
me,
all mixed honestly. Together. Nebraska.
Yeah.
Nebraska.
Yeah. Was that the one? That was the one at Nebraska. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't remember if that was the second or third to last one. We just looked so bad in the first half, and then the definition of tale of two halves.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this is a weird team. This is like in February, I think basketball is always in this era a small guy wing sport. It didn't used to be, but the last 10 to 15 years, I think it's always that year round. But big men do seem to have more of an impact in the regular season than they do in the tournament. It's even more so a guard and wing sport in college come tournament time. Mm-hmm. And the argument for Michigan State being in good shape is they have one of the best backcourts in the entire country. And you have four guys that are shooting 41% or higher from three. They're the only Power Five team in the country that has that. And Akins, yeah. Walker, Hauser, and Hall. So I got four guys that are, by definition, objective elite shooters. I got three ball handlers. Can they mitigate that lack of a big man? I think they can, not to win six games in the big dance. I think that's a tall order. At some point, you're going to have to grab an offensive rebound and get an extra possession and steal a possession. And this team doesn't do that.
Yeah.
But they are capable of going on a run. I would rather have a really good backcourt and good wing play than a really good front court, a bunch of good bigs and shoddy guard play, especially in the tournament. So
right.
I like this team. I wish they had gotten someone in the portal. That's the oldest Michigan State argument ever. People are kind of tired of it. So I'll just leave that there. I wish they had done that and they didn't, but I like this team a lot. If you have four guys that can shoot at that level and three very good ball handlers, you can do a lot, but it is going to be the definition of shots got to fall, because I don't see them having one of those games where, and we've seen it every time Izzo run, there's one game where they shoot 33.8% from the field as a team and win anyway.
Yeah.
I don't think this team is going to be able to do that. I mean, you would need the other team to have an even worse night. I don't see them as capable, or at least a good bet, to overcome that. So they do have a flaw. It's just, is it a serious flaw or a fatal flaw? I don't know which one yet, but I like this team. I really do.
Yeah. And one guy in particular I really like is Joey Hauser. I think his game, I watched him in person at IU, and it was like a Red Mamba out there. It was like Scalabrine. He's just moving at his own pace, and he's getting open shots, and he's tall, and he can hit threes. But I was looking through your Twitter, and it was people not like Joey Hauser in the MSU? Is he a malign?
Oh, they do now. A bunch of Johnny come Waitleys. I was getting pitchforks thrown at my head last year.
What are they not like? What was he not shooting well? I wasn't following too close.
There are a number of things. I mean, he does struggle defensively. Everybody understands that. And that's not an effort thing. That's just, he's a little slow footed side to side. He doesn't have the best hip mobility in the world. So yeah, that was part of it, but he was tentative. It's not, if you look at his numbers, although he's shooting much better now, he was never a bad shooter at Michigan State, but he had a little bit of that lack of confidence issues. He'd be wide open and would hesitate and then pass out. And yeah, he did have frustrating moments, but I felt like the Michigan State fan base didn't see. You can see where a guy has it and just needs to take a breath and relax versus a guy that just is never going to be good. And I'm not going to name any Michigan State guys because I want to be a dick, but there have been Michigan State guys over the years where I'm telling my buddies, like, this guy's never going to be good. I always saw it with Hauser. You could see the guy's a good player, really good player.
Yeah.
He just had to take a breath, settle down, and, hey, man, like, let it rip, you know, believe in yourself a little bit. And, yeah, so the Michigan State fan base loves him now. But I said he's like this generation's Goran Sutan, not in game because they're very different style players, but in terms of the Michigan State fan base, like, basically not hating, but having so many issues and constantly complaining about him. Right. And then senior year, it's this redemption tour and everybody loves him. Sutan wins the regional MVP and, you know, they knock off number one overall seed Louisville in 2009. And now everyone remembers him so fondly, but they hated him for 3.8 years before that. So yeah, they love him now. That was not the case for a long time. And I've always been a Hauser guy. I always saw it with him, and I'm just thrilled for him. I'm as happy for him as anybody on the team to see him doing well. And I think it's been a redemption tour for him.
Yeah, he's fun. He's a lot of fun to watch. I just like his game. And I love anybody who can play well and that slow. Like, I just appreciate people going at their own pace. And he's just going to do exactly what he's good at. So I always love that. I love watching guys like that. I'm curious. I want to talk about the Big Ten tournament, but Michigan State's prospects, this all, you know, it's always like trying to find the teams that are hungry enough. And I don't know where Michigan State is projected in the tournament. And if I've said it on here before, but like, I hated the Big Ten tournament. If I knew we were pretty much locked into a certain number seed, I did not care for it. Is this Michigan State team? Do you think they're looking for a higher seed? Is this something they always seem to like the Big Ten tournament a little bit? I mean, every group is a little different, but do you see them being able to make a run here?
Oh yeah, for sure. And part of it is a function of the conference isn't that good this year. It's just wild. Not. Yeah. It's not a good conference this year. I mean, would it shock anybody? I'm not predicting it. I wouldn't, you know, bet on it, but would it shock anybody if Ohio State got hot and knocked off Purdue in a game? I mean, a couple of things would have to happen for them to even get to Purdue. But I'm just saying, if it got there, it's nothing is that surprising. And Tom Izzo said something yesterday, the day before, about, you know, look, Minnesota's looked a lot better the last couple of weeks. I mean, even like the bottom of the conference has looked, you know, functional and competent. So yeah, I think Michigan State can absolutely win the whole thing. And this team does not strike me as a team that doesn't want to be there ever and is just going to kind of mail it in, as a relative term. Mm-hmm. For whatever flaws they have, that's not one of them. They have a lot of everyone's the dog in them thing is so overused, but it's kind of true. AJ Hogard is actually kind of scary. I mean, that is a compliment. Like he would kind of frighten me. It's got to actually like be locked in. Like he's kind of terrifying, you know, when he's glaring at you. And Tyson Walker has some of that same kind of FU edge. I don't see them as being a team that, oh, you know, we have to win this to go from a 7 seed to a 6 in the tournament. I just think they want to win every game they play, and they have, for whatever flaws they have an edge to them, and that's to their benefit, I think, because they're not one of the best 5 or 6 teams in the country, but their compete level is really high. Not every Michigan State team has had that, but the best evidence that they're going to really go for it in this Big Ten tournament is Tom Izzo's won the thing a bunch of times and has, you know, gotten close a bunch of other times. The culture of the program has been to embrace it. Now, Tom Izzo used to hate it openly his first 5 to 6 years of it, but has since really embraced it. I'm curious, is it your opinion, or was it common with your teammates? Were you guys all kind of like F this, or were you kind of an outlier in that regard?
It wasn't quite F this. My senior year in particular, like, we just expended all of our energy in the regular season. And then, like, it was such a high to share the title of the Big Ten and, like, get there from nowhere. It took so much effort that, like, there was just a mental letdown after that, I think. It was like we accomplished something so big in our minds and, like, so unbelievable to some other people, to most other people, that like we just had a bit of a mental lapse. Now I will say this, Ohio upset us. That team was very good. So they were not the seed they were. They were much more talented. They almost knocked off UNC to get in the Elite Eight, and UNC won that year. So, but yeah, it was definitely winning the Big Tournament. It was like, I just want to get to the NCAA tournament now. Like, I don't care. I want to win one game, get a little fresh next game. You know, I already know what my job is. Like, I know I'm going to execute it in the NCAA tournament. I was just like chomping at the bit to get to the NCAA tournament and nobody get hurt because we played like 6 guys. And so I don't know. I had a really different view of it, but I don't think that's super common. I mean, I know that this Michigan team's obviously dying to win every single game. And you've got a lot of Michigan teams that have been the same way. I think my team was like just a little more unique in that sense. But I think even that 13 team, I think they got knocked out, didn't they, pretty early in that Big Ten tournament or something?
The 2013 Michigan State team?
Michigan
team. Michigan team.
They didn't win that, did they? I thought they lost. I don't remember, but
I can't. What was the year that we played in the championship game? Was that, I thought that was like kind of 13-14 range. I can't remember. I know we won it in 12. That was when we beat the Jared Sullinger Ohio State team.
That was a fun one.
That was a great game. That was a heavyweight battle.
Revenge.
But you guys have higher stakes in this thing. I mean, you're playing for your lives. I think it was Andrew Kumbo, a Michigan State Twitter guy, had a kind of breakdown and projection on Twitter today where he was like, here's the outcomes. Michigan State loses the first game and they're out. They'll probably be a 7 seed. they win the whole thing, they're probably a sixth seed. So it's got to, basically like, it's either banner or bust. Like, is there a huge difference in terms of big implications, whether they win one game or two? It's like, you obviously, to me, you want to win a banner. That's great. I don't know if there's a whole lot of difference between losing the first game and losing in the championship game. Obviously, the more wins, the better, but it seems like they're locked into that kind of 6-7. You really want to stay off that 8-seed line so you can dodge that 1-seed bullet in the second game. So I don't think – I'm not going to say it doesn't matter. It matters a lot less for Michigan State than it does for a lot of schools, particularly if we're talking about the Big Ten, Michigan. I don't know. I feel there's all sorts of projections, and this stuff doesn't occur in a vacuum. Obviously, there's other teams that are doing stuff and vying for a spot in the tournament. But if Michigan loses the first game, they're done. I think everybody understands that. The question will be, you know, what if they win one and lose one? As long as they win one, to me, they have a shot. They'll need some help. But I'm more interested in the Michigan side personally, just because I think Michigan State's kind of a settled thing at this point.
Yeah, no, for sure. I see people have said that, and it's kind of surprised me. I didn't think if they beat Rutgers that they would be in, but I don't know. They have a weird mix of bad losses and good net rating recently, especially the upward trend. How much does that play a part? I don't know. You know, it's always a mystery. I think they've figured out a little more, but this Michigan team has been a little odd. I mean, last year I thought it wasn't as big of a shoe-in as people like expected them to get in the tournament. So I might just be a little off on my evaluations. I'm not good at these things anyways, but if they win one and get in, I think I might be a little shocked, to be honest, but that is how much the committee does love the Big Ten. I mean, people love the Big Ten, and it's kind of bizarre because I haven't watched enough of the rest of college basketball, but Big Ten's not great. It's just not great. And I know you say, like, people say that they beat the hell out of each other, and that's fine. And I will say every team has looked a lot better in the second half of the Big Ten season. But the first half of the Big Ten season, watching those games was so ugly. I mean, it was brutal to watch IU at times. It still is the way they play, just only Trace Jackson Davis at times. But I think that the basketball has improved, but they're definitely not like the powerhouse. Like, the amount of teams that they're going to get in compared to other conferences, I think means nothing, which is kind of the case usually.
I mean, to me, the best measure of it is you go into many, many years in the last 15, 20 years, several of them you can pick from. For the tournament, right before the first game of the tournament, there's 2 to 4 Big Ten teams that have like top 10 to 12 national championship odds in Vegas. Like, there's years where Michigan had the third best odds, Michigan State had the first or second best odds, and then maybe you have Purdue at like 10 or 11. There's usually at least 2 or 3 teams that have really good title odds. Purdue does this year, and I don't know if you want to bet on Matt Painter getting it done for 6 games. I know I don't.
Not with that.
And other than that, I mean, there's no one in that. I haven't checked recently, but I don't think there's anybody in that top like 15. So that's an objective way to look at this and say, yeah, this conference is down. And the whole beat each other up thing, save that argument for a year where there's 3 or 4 viable national championship contenders. This ain't 2023. That's not the case now. So it's a weird, weird year, which makes the Big Ten conference tournament even more difficult to predict. I told my buddy Anthony Broom, who's a Michigan guy, I saw Michigan at 25-1 today to win the tournament. I'm not saying they're going to win the Big Ten tournament, but you're giving me 25-1, and I got like 3 or 4 really talented guys, and most of my losses are by one bucket anyway. I feel like 25-1 is pretty good. I wouldn't mind putting $100 on Michigan at 25-1 to win the Big Ten tournament. So it's a weird year. I think there's going to be a lot of people on shows like this that look really dumb for any strong predictions. It's going to be an interesting weekend.
Yeah. I'm putting $5 to $10 on Illinois, Penn State, and Michigan. I think the odds are there with +200 or more than +2000. So I don't know. Why not throw it down? Who cares? I mean, this is March, and those teams are real hungry. So sometimes that works out, sometimes it doesn't. But I think this year, it's up for grabs with everybody. And it kind of seems like everyone does want to show up, but it's a game-by-game basis. I mean, we will see. It's going to be interesting, to say the least. I'm curious at how this all fleshes out in the NCAA tournament. I'm going to laugh my ass off when this is the year, like, the Big Ten gets the most teams into the Sweet 16 since whatever. And it's like, of course, this is the year because it's the most unpredictable thing in the entire world. And every time we think we know what basketball is and sports are and what we can predict, it just comes and bites us in the ass. So I don't know. I'm not holding out hope that the Big Ten is going to do well, but it seems like it's set up almost like that first Michigan, that like Harbaugh season, was it two seasons ago, the first college football playoff appearance, and they're like, oh, it's going to be a bad year. And it's like, watch, they'll do well because there's no expectation. So I don't know. It feels kind of slightly like that. I feel like that's like the romantics of sports. No, would you agree with that?
Oh yeah. And especially this year, I think the national landscape is sort of reflective of the Big Ten, or maybe vice versa. It's not to the same degree. There's better teams on the national stage than there are in the Big Ten. I think Houston is better than any team in the Big Ten, for example. But there's no, you know, supreme Jay Wright Villanova team or one of the, you know, sort of iconic North Carolina teams or the Anthony Davis Kentucky team. And I think you have like two or three teams that are really good, like five or six teams that are pretty good. And then it's kind of like a bunch of C plus to B minus. And I who can predict this tournament confidently? I mean, Houston, for as good as they are, they've looked incompetent during long stretches of games against mediocre competition this year. That they usually end up figuring it out. But this is not a year where you're watching like a Bill Self 35-2 Kansas team where almost every night they just look a cut above. Even the best of the best in this country look like they can get popped at any time by anybody with a pulse that's shooting decent from deep. So this is the year where the office secretary who has never watched a game is going to win the bracket pool. It's just, that's, don't even try. No. Don't ignore every podcast that's telling you there's throw it all out this year, even more so than other years. I mean, that's every year, but especially this year doesn't feel like a chalk year. I feel like we're going to see a lot of weird stuff this year.
Yeah, I'm still picking Houston. I picked them. This is going to be my 30 in a row. I like them. I'm waiting for them to win, mostly so Kelvin Sampson get a championship and I can talk shit to IU fans because it's my favorite thing to do in the entire world.
But I'll never forgive him for the Jordan Poole thing. I mean, that was so – what is he doing? That was a not guarding the inbounder at that. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, sorry. That was pretty bad.
That was so stupid. I was saying in real time they're lining up. I'm like – Get on the inbounder. I knew it was going to happen. So I'll never forgive him for that. But Houston is my favorite team. And I totally agree with you. They play like, and they did last year too, their brand of basketball. Man, that would be fun to root for. They're just trying to punch everybody in the mouth and they are in your face. And they have very few lapses. They have a couple mental because they're college kids and even NBA players do. But they don't have any like effort lapses. Those guys are on 100. For the entire 40 minutes. I'm with you if I had to pick, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they lost in the second game either. It's a weird year.
Yeah, definitely. I always just look at a team and I'm like, would I be scared to play them? Yes. Okay. I believe in them. They go from there.
That was Texas Tech in 2019, and we both ran into that buzzsaw, and they had a lot of that same stuff. That Texas Tech was like terrifying. I was almost like rooting for you guys to get them out of our way and then lose the next game. But yeah, they were a scary team. I wanted no part of them. And that was a tough break, you know, for Michigan State. And you guys were just farther upstream of that buzzsaw.
Yeah. Well, that adds complexity to the conversation of success. I mean, Jordan Poole doesn't hit that shot. Are we talking about Beeline the same? I don't know. Probably not quite the same. So it's weird things that happen in March that
and playing a bunch of turds in the next three games. I mean, it's like Florida State 9 seed, Texas A&M 7 seed, Loyola Chicago 11 seed. Like, where can I sign up for this easy ass path? I mean, my God. But I'm not going to get into the maybe Beeline's not that great after all conversation because I'm probably a bigger Beeline fan. I think that guy's so good. And he came into that program and they were a mess. I never thought it would work. And I was wrong. I love that guy. So not to denigrate Beeline because he's awesome. That particular team is the definition of you got to have some luck. How do you make the national championship game playing nobody higher than a 6 seed? And you were a 3. It wasn't like they were a 1 seed that really earned the easiest path. I mean, there's not many national runner-ups that didn't play a single top 5 seed. It just doesn't happen very often.
No, it's bizarre. The NCAA tournament is just absolutely bizarre. And I'm still bitter about my senior year, but we will not get into that because that is a too far of a conversation with seeding.
What happened? What's that in reference?
We lost to Ohio.
Oh, that was – I thought that was your junior year. So that was your senior year. Okay.
Junior year, we should have beat Duke to get to the Sweet 16, and we lost that. But, yeah, we lost to Ohio my senior year. And that team, yeah, they went on to challenge North Carolina. It looked like they were possibly going to win, I think, if I remember correctly, to get to the Elite Eight. But then they lost. I think North Carolina went on to win that year, if I'm not mistaken, because I remember Tyler Zeller winning. But, yeah, that exact same team returned next year, all five starters. The coach left for Illinois, and they didn't make the tournament the next year. And so I was like, you got to be kidding me. But they were good. They had really good players, and we got, I thought, screwed out of a seed that year, just a one better seed. And yeah, it was, I can't remember what we were. It was like four, was it three, four, 12? Is that what it is? I can't remember, but I remember just
this tournament's stupid, man. I mean,
Like,
I don't blame you. I'm Michigan. I mean, you were on the court, so I'll defer on the, the level of emotional investment. But I mean, the Middle Tennessee State thing. I'm not saying they were a great team. They got just destroyed in their next game. But, like, how many teams are going to win when your opponent comes out and is, like, 7 of 8 from three on crazy shots, like, immediately? You're down, like, 15-2 before you even know the game started. I'm not saying it was an insurmountable. Like, Michigan State had a lead or it was tied with, like, a couple minutes left. So they could have won that game. But it's just, you know, if Middle Tennessee State does anything other than hit 7 ridiculous shots from the parking lot in the first 4 minutes – I don't think that game happens, and that team might win the whole thing. You just have to survive that. You talked about North Carolina surviving a scare and then going on to big success. There's a lot of national championship teams that barely got out of a game against a lesser opponent. They won by 1 or 2. You know, the Louisville team that beat you, which not your team, but that was the year before. That was the year after, the 2013 team. But yeah, that Louisville team, Wichita State had them dead in the semifinal and they pulled that one out. So yeah, you need some weird stuff to happen. Although Wichita State was better than Middle Tennessee State and Ohio, but yeah, that's why this thing is so hard. And this year more than ever. And that's why I think that Sweet 16 thing is not something to completely thumb your nose at. We were talking about earlier, cause it's hard to win even a couple games in this thing. It just is. It's a weird thing. You have one guy that's off and one guy that's on the other team and you're just gone. It's not, you know, a best of three or whatever. So
yep.
I'm fascinated to see this tournament play out. And this would not surprise me if we see like a 6 seed win the whole thing. I would not be surprised. This is the year to do it.
No, you get hot. And this is a year of all years for a team to get hot. I remember, was it a couple years ago when it was like Baylor and Gonzaga were the clear favorites? And they were like, well, it's anybody's game. But then it came down to Baylor and Gonzaga. Like, I don't think it is this year. I think it's really like whoever's going to get hot can make a run and be consistent. It's going to come down to some guard play, some senior leadership, I think. I mean, talent is always helpful, but I think you're going to see some maybe more advances from some more experienced teams. I don't know. It'll be fun, but it's fickle as hell. And the conversations around them get very sure of themselves when these things happen or don't happen. So it's a college sports is the most interesting sports topic in that regard, because we want to make so many absolutes about a lot of luck and a lot of situational things that have to happen. So it's constant, but it's good conversations. I appreciate you coming on and chat with me about it. I do love these kinds of talks where it gets a little layered with these sorts of things, and to have your perspective with everything and the history of it. Like I can't go that far back with Michigan and Michigan State history. I barely remember my game. So I appreciate you coming on and giving me some wisdom there and a different perspective. It was really great. And I'll definitely have to have it back on. We'll see what happens with the tournament. But you know, I'll be chirping on Twitter, so you can find me there. If they beat Rutgers, you better believe I'm calling for like a 5-point win against Purdue.
Oh, you have to. That's you're doing your job as a fan and as an alum. So you should be. Yeah, I appreciate the invite, and we went like an hour, and you didn't once apologize for beating Michigan State twice and breaking my heart, and having my friend send pictures of you for 6 years after the fact. So yeah. I'm still waiting. I'll check my mailbox. Maybe you mailed the apology, but happy to do it anytime. And you know, if you're ever in the Oakland County, Michigan area, I got to get you in the Michigan State room. I don't know if it's going to like melt your skin.
Probably not, there, but I would, that would be good. I would appreciate that. Well, yeah. It's funny. It was my senior year and Keith Appling looked at me. It was a free throw. And he said, you guys are trying to beat us 3 times in a row, huh? And I was like, that's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. And I was like, that's when I realized that we were back on at least close to equal footing and that the rivalry was back. And that was a success in and of itself. So it's fun to have that rivalry is what it is. It's always for me. I mean, I don't care as much about football. So the Ohio State rivalry was just never really did it for me the way Michigan State did. So it's fun to have it each year. And I hope for the sake of both sides that Juwan can figure this thing out. Steer the ship in the right direction, like I think he will and is capable of, and keep that rivalry going because it is some of the most fun back and forth on both sides. On Twitter, I try and stay away. You get pretty involved. You're pretty good with that, but I try and stay away from that. But overall, it's been a good run so far.
Yeah. Next time we'll talk about why your team's completely locked up Draymond Green. Like he guy's one of the best players in the country in 2012, and just was terrible in both the games. you guys locked him up for. I don't know what, yeah, that we can do that next time, but I'm fascinated. Like, what was the secret sauce with Draymond where the guy would go like 20 points, 19 points, 18 points, 22 points, the Michigan game, like 6. Like, it was 3 or 4 games in a row. I felt like he was always bad in that game the last couple of years when he was at his peak. So I'm fascinated for that conversation. But we'll leave that next time, but
definitely,
I appreciate
it. Yeah. Hey, shout out Zach Novak. I give him a lot of credit there, but definitely some game planning. I mean, Draymond was enemy number one we were focusing on. But yeah, we'll definitely have to talk about that next time. Justin, I appreciate you, man. A lot of fun. We'll definitely have to do it again. Appreciate everybody listening. We'll put the link up. You can find Justin on Twitter. If you see my stuff, you find it through Twitter. But what is your ad? It's at
Darko State News. Don't ask why. It's a long story.
I will. But you can find them there. Appreciate you. Until next time, everybody. See ya.
Thanks.